Welcome back to Project Geekology. This is episode 67. I'm one of your hosts, Dakota, and I'm joined as always with
Anthony.
And today we're covering Frozen, the first film that came out over 10 years ago now. And that's kind of crazy to think about because it's such a huge phenomenon. We kind of assumed that it came out a little bit more recently than 10 years ago, but a lot has changed in those 10 years. Sequels come out, several expanded universe titles have populated like bookstore shelves and stuff, and we're going to touch on a little bit of that. But the main focus of today's show is definitely going to be the 2013 film Frozen, and basically not only the impact that it had, but like just talking about the film itself, like getting into the nitty-gritty of why did Elsa do this? What happened to their parents, their queen? Stuff like that. So we look forward to talking about Frozen and all the many things that come along with it. And we hope you enjoy the ride as well, because we know this isn't everyone's cup of tea. We know this is a little bit more for a younger audience, generally speaking. But I think that it's something that can be enjoyed by pretty much anyone. It's a pretty four-quadrant film if you allow it to, you know, just tell its own story. So before we get into any of that, Anthony, what have you been up to lately?
Well, we just had the month of December pretty much come and go like a blink. We just had that whole holiday season just come and go, and now we're about halfway into January. I know it's a little bit longer than I wanted to get this first episode out in the year, but the month has just been flying by.
I want to apologize a little bit about our tardiness. I know we do this pretty regularly at this point, but we promised you a podcast about Hayao Miyazaki's most recent film, The Boy and the Heron, last time after we covered Castle in the Sky, and we did not do that. I think it's a mix of a couple things. We both had a lot going on in our lives. I'm going through preparing for a literal life move, like I'm moving somewhere else. So there's a lot of packing, a lot of planning involved in that. And Anthony has a lot of stuff going on with the holidays and stuff. So I think it just kept like getting in the way of every time we wanted to film, something kept coming up on both of our ends. The Boy and the Heron, I don't know if you felt this too, Anthony, but that's a movie that you need to cover like directly after watching it.
Yes, there's a lot that's going on. Like, that movie felt like one giant metaphor, and I do want to cover this film, but I have to watch it again because there is a lot that happens in that film. I wouldn't be able to cover it now just based on memory. I'd have to watch it again.
100%. So I think we're going to wait until that's on some streaming service or on Blu-ray, whatever, just so that we can cover that with some semblance of just being comfortable with what we're actually putting out, because there is so much in the movie. I like what you said about it being a giant metaphor, because, you know, it goes into like Miyazaki's own life story. It goes into like what he wants his art to represent. It goes into the friends you make along the way, and there's so much more. It's a huge metaphor for art and life in general, and I think that to really nail that down in podcast form, you need to discuss it right after watching it. So I think that's a movie that we're going to have to hold off on, even though we promise you the next episode would be Boy and the Heron. Alas, it's Frozen. I'm sorry.
Which, it's a good time of year for Frozen because we are in the winter season, so, and fair. That's a very cold film.
I know you know all about the cold living in South Florida.
Oh man, we are preparing for the blizzard that will never show up.
As soon as it hits like 70 degrees in Florida, you know, your grandparents are making you wear like heavy jackets and, you know, oh, it's freezing. Oh, be careful.
Yeah, as soon as the temperature hits 60, like people are putting on like
parkas, bro.
Yeah, man. They look like they're about to go skiing.
Yeah, no skiing in Florida, I'll tell you that. I used to live in South Florida and I visit pretty regularly. I'm planning on visiting pretty soon just because I have a bunch of family down there. Anthony's down there, so we hang out occasionally. But yeah, Anthony, what have you been up to lately?
You know, man, well, I mean, aside from, you know, dealing with all the holiday stuff, my anime consumption has like really like upticked. There's a new one that just dropped that's pretty popular. It's probably gonna be on par with like a Jujutsu Kaisen and a Demon Slayer. It's called Solo Leveling. It's been pretty popular. There was some buzz around it for a while, and when they finally announced that the anime was gonna drop, like people were just getting so like crazy excited. I think I started seeing some people cosplay beforehand, kind of like when they announced Chainsaw Man. I saw so many cosplay Chainsaw Man before the anime even dropped. I was like, oh man, this guy's ahead of the curve.
Most of these anime come from manga beforehand, like long beforehand.
Every once in a while you get something that is like kind of its own thing, but yeah, a lot of it is inspired by manga or directly translated from manga.
The anime that only last like one or two seasons are generally not manga first, as far as like my experience with anime goes. I haven't been super caught up with it lately. I know there's a lot of stuff I have to catch up on. I'm still trying to catch up with One Piece a little bit. There's been some One Piece news recently. I don't know if you've kept up with that. I know we talked a little bit on the side.
Right, I saw that. So we have a prequel to One Piece called Monsters that's coming out later this month in like less than 10 days.
So what is it a prequel of? Is that like when the Great Pirate Era began?
It's gonna center around a character that you get to see in the Wano country arc, which is later on.
Yeah,
I'm not there yet, but like I said, I watch a good bit of One Piece and then I'll take a break and I'll watch other anime. Every once in a while, I'm gonna be honest with you, sometimes I want to take a break from the shonen stuff or the action stuff. Right. There is action anime that's not shonen style that I will watch, but sometimes I'll watch like slice of life stuff, and then sometimes there's like comedy ones that I like to watch. There's one called Rent a Girlfriend, which is like absolutely ridiculous.
It's, yes, I've heard of it.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. And another one that's pretty interesting that I've been watching is called Ashinoko.
Ashinoko, I've never heard of it.
So in that anime, you come across this doctor that is a big fan of a Japanese idol, which, you know, is like a singer. And the biggest reason why he's a real big fan of this idol, and her name is Ai Hoshino, and the biggest reason why he's a fan is because he had this young girl that was under his care and she was terminally ill, and so they kind of connected over that, and so he just kind of like became a big fan, and I guess like he kind of held on to that after this girl passes. And there's this belief in this world that sometimes when somebody dies, they'll be reincarnated as a celebrity's baby. That's exactly what happens in this anime. The doctor gets killed and he gets like reincarnated as this idol's child because she has like these secret children, and that like she kind of goes to his hospital because his hospital is like out in the mountains. And so things get crazy. I know like I've really dived into some spoilers here, but it's been out for a little while. But there's a lot more to it than just that. Like, because I mean, this literally just the first episode. So there's a lot of other stuff that happens, kind of him navigating life. It's kind of weird because they remember their past lives. Like, he remembers his past life.
Yeah, no, it is weird. Like, everything you described is a weird thing.
But it's interesting. It kind of, like, grabbed me for that kind of reason. I've been trying to step out of my normal anime circle and try different things. And it's been pretty fun. I've been really enjoying. I feel like my relationship with anime has evolved and it's changed, so I've been really enjoying it.
Okay, nice. So what are your thoughts on Wit Studio doing a One Piece remake?
Yeah, I remember reading about that.
Now that they're done with Attack on Titan, like that's like the next project they want to work on, which is a crazy thing because we're talking about one of the big three anime ever, One Piece, Bleach, and Naruto, and they're just redoing it.
Attack on Titan is a huge anime too. Like, it's huge.
And the animation is beautiful. But so, it took them forever to finish it.
It did. It really did.
It took them forever to finish.
The craziest thing is that like how they really like drew it out. Like Attack on Titan, the final season, part one. Attack on Titan, the final season, part two. And then they just kind of like kept on parting it out. I'm like, what is going on?
Yeah, dude, it was like Attack on Titan, part three, second half. I'm just like, come on.
Yeah, but like part three, first half.
I'm not caught up with Attack on Titan. It's been years since I've watched it, but that's one of the shows that I definitely want to catch up on because I've heard that they nailed it in the anime. So
it's so good. It's definitely worth giving that the watch, like, you know. So yeah, I had seen that One Piece remake. It's definitely one of those things.
You were initially really upset by it. or not really upset, but you were just kind of like, but why? And I think a lot of people are, you know?
It's, so I understand what they're trying to do. I think what, because, I mean, obviously this stuff is happening with Oda, you know, there. And I think the biggest thing that he wants to do is update some of this, like, older, the older seasons. Because, I mean, like, when you watch the earlier seasons, they dated. Are definitely
it's,
dated.
It's,
like, they're old.
It's 90s animation at this
point. Yeah, exactly. And so, honestly, like, when you watch the current anime, they kind of stay faithful with that 90s animation look, but it looks a lot more vibrant and it looks a lot crispier, you know? So
I know exactly what you mean, yeah.
So I'm trying to think, if do they want to update the look? Are the characters going to be look different? Are they going to try to maintain the look of the characters but like kind of update them? I mean, Netflix did a really good job with the live action. I think that, you know, if they really just follow under the say of Oda, because I mean,
yeah,
the manga and the anime have lasted for so long for a reason. So, I mean, look, if you're keeping an anime alive for over 20 years, yeah, you're going to listen to this man, you know?
Yeah. I also heard with the Wit Studio One Piece remake that they wanted to cut some of the fat. And I know you had a bit of an issue with, like, the idea of that when we talked about it briefly. Like, you felt like the current anime cuts a lot of the fat, but
right. So the thing about One Piece, and you know, you can look up online, is that one of the biggest reasons why One Piece is so renowned is that it doesn't rely heavily on fillers like a lot of these anime do. DBZ was notorious for it. Naruto was absolutely ridiculous with it. I'm like, dude, honestly, like, when it comes to anime, like, if you don't have the story ready, like, just give me a shorter season. I don't want to watch all this extra stuff just because whatever,
right,
you know?
And there's, like, so much recap, and then, like, yeah. No, I totally hear you. So, what I've realized about the One Piece anime is that it's pretty faithful as a one-to-one, like, reenactment of the manga, where they'll try to do about an episode per chapter of the manga. And you know, it's a weekly manga, it's not long, it's maybe 20 pages, 25, 30 pages in length, and they basically elongate that into a 23 minute episode with credits and stuff. So it's altogether probably like 18 minutes of actual
anime. Right, yeah. I was like when you cut out the intro and the outro, yeah, you're getting about 18 minutes. Sometimes it's a lot shorter when you skip those recaps. You'll get like the intro and then like a 3 minute recap. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're cutting out like 5 minutes.
Yeah, there's no way I need to know all of this information. I do not need to know what Sanji
I just watched
less.
It. I literally just watched this like 2 episodes ago.
But that being said, sometimes it's going chapter by chapter from the weekly manga series. It does feel like filler. I'm currently stuck on the Black Cat Kuro Pirates, which is really early on. There's like 10 episodes where they're fighting on the beach, and I'm just like, I literally just read this in the manga. I just want to get past this.
That's also probably what makes it a little bit harder, is that you read it.
I literally read it.
So, see, like, I'm just straight up watching the anime. I'm not watching and reading the manga alongside. And by the time we got to the live action, or the One Piece live action, I had already passed this point like a long time ago. So by the time we got to the One Piece live action, I'm in Skypiea.
I'm going about this totally backwards, because I watched the live action first, then I went to manga, and now I'm in the anime.
You're out of order.
Usually people go anime, manga, and then live action, if they even get to live action. But actually, a lot of people have watched the live action, and this year alone, One Piece has skyrocketed in popularity. I think it's because of Netflix and what
yes,
they're doing over there.
Yes. Because you know what's crazy? Is that One Piece was on Netflix for a good while. Then they took it off earlier in the year. And then all of a sudden, it all came back. I'm trying to understand why it came off to begin with, because they had that live action lined up. But now that it's like they have it brought back, now they're continually updating and bringing on more episodes. Although, like, I just watch it on Crunchyroll.
I think it's a little bit like the Disney Vault theory. If you know that it's going to be gone for a little period of time, you'll binge watch it. And then when it comes back, you're just like, oh, it's back on. In the lead up and following the live action's popularity on Netflix that brought a lot of people to like watching the anime. The subreddit for One Piece went from 1 million followers to over 3 million in the span of a year. The whole IP is just booming right now. You spoke about the prequel series that they're coming out with on Netflix. Netflix is also sponsoring that Wit Studio remake of One Piece. They have the live action that did so good. It was the number 3 English-speaking show on Netflix for the entire year of 2023. It was massive. And they're going to be filming the second season this coming year. So, it's looking good for One Piece right now. From what I hear, it's become one of the best fantasy series, period. It's pretty low-tier fantasy, like in its first fantasy, but I've seen a lot of people who are genuinely into fantasy and like fantasy series that say One Piece is top tier fantasy when you actually get through it, because the part of the like what works about it is the journey. We're like 23 minutes into this. We're just talking about One Piece forever. But really quickly, let me talk about what I've been up to.
Yeah. What have you been up to? One Piece? What was it? You said continuation of One Piece is what you've been up to?
Oh, yeah. I've been reading One Piece. Yeah, that was pretty... Now, I got into... You're going to be very proud of me. I got into a video game that I really enjoyed that isn't Hogwarts Legacy. It was Avatar Frontiers of Pandora.
Oh, yeah. I remember talking about that. Yeah. I had started it a little bit ago. It's definitely interesting. It's very... The world is very vibrant.
I'm very impressed. Not necessarily with the story. I think it's pretty mild story-wise.
Those open world games are tough, man. But when it comes to like
story... It's tough to build a narrative around.
Right. Because when you have those open world games, you can really get lost in these like side objectives. And sometimes that can water down the main narrative of a video game.
Sure.
A game that does pretty well with the side stuff is The Witcher.
So my experience with Avatar Frontiers of Pandora, this is a game that I always knew I was going to be playing just because I'm pretty invested in James Cameron's Avatar as a whole right now. I made that timeline video about a year ago, and that really popped off for my YouTube channel, Geek Critique. So I knew I wanted to play this because I knew it was going to be a canon entry into that series. So I went into it like from a lore perspective, like what can I learn about Pandora and the timeline and everything about this. But what I gained wasn't so much lore, it was more just an appreciation of like the intricacies of Pandora itself and just like the different plant life, flora, fauna, the stuff that you can do as a Na'vi. And what I find really amazing that I can't experience necessarily in any other game is there's nothing in Frontiers of Pandora that you can do that I can't picture like Sully or Neytiri doing in the Avatar movies. Every item you craft, every person you talk to, every quest you do, it feels like something that actually belongs in the world. As opposed to, like, I can't say the same for like Hogwarts Legacy, like doing some of like the, I forget what it was called, but like that type of magic that the main character unlocks in Hogwarts Legacy, that's not something that really jives well with the story of the Harry Potter series. You can build it around that, but it doesn't feel like it's authentic to the world.
Right, or just being a student that's just running around doing unforgivable curses.
At the middle, All right, so my biggest issue with Hogwarts Legacy, yes, that's a big one, that you can just... unforgivable curse however much you want. There's no repercussions. One of the first story quests, sneaking around the library at night, you do that, you're thinking like, oh man, this is going to be really useful sneaking around Hogwarts at night because you're not supposed to do that, there's a curfew. And then they don't ever enforce curfew ever again in the entire game.
Dude, you're just, you could just like, you get free reign everywhere.
It's fun, I don't hate it at all, but there's stuff like that that doesn't happen in Frontiers of Pandora, if you know what I mean. Like, everything that you can do or can't do makes sense story-wise within the world. So I think from that perspective, I think it's a really, really strong game. And I'm really impressed with how well visualized the entire world, the open world feels, you know? Mm-hmm. Not just like from a horizontal and linear plane, but like a vertical plane, because there's so much of the game is like verticality in terms of like climbing up the floating mountains and stuff. I think it's pretty cool.
Speaking about video games, something that I'm, well, there's two games that I'm super stoked about, and you probably know one. We have the remake of Persona 3 coming out, Persona 3 Reload. Super stoked about that.
I was gonna say, dude, if you say Persona, I'm gonna turn off the mic.
But dude, like, I mean, we have Persona 3 Reload. That was when they started to modernize or what Persona is now. I played a bit of Persona 3. I didn't get far into it. I got maybe about a couple hours into it. But when this was announced, I was like, ah, you know what? Let me just wait to play it. Like updated. I don't want to play this now, and then if the story is like super similar, then I'm not going to really want to play it. So
you're excited about the remake,
right? I'm super excited about the remake. It, you know, it's like a ground up remake type thing. The other one was kind of like a point and click in some instances, and then you could run around the dungeons in some areas. So they definitely changed this one up a lot.
By the way, to everyone listening, you can always tell when, like, we haven't recorded in a while because we have so much to say to each other before we actually talk about the topic at hand.
So right, we're 30 minutes in. So, and then, yeah, just for...
what's the other game?
And then just real quick, we have Final Fantasy VII Rebirth.
Okay, yeah, I kind of thought that it was going to be Final Fantasy. That's going to be huge. All right, without further ado, we're 30 minutes into this recording. We're halfway through discussion. Let's actually talk about the... Now, I would consider it a Disney classic at this point. It's Disney... It's like gold when it comes to like a Disney IP at this point, because Frozen became such a huge phenomenon even before it hit theaters, because it had like that one single, Let It Go, that played forever.
Right, yeah. Frozen had such a chokehold on the everything. Disney community for such a long time. I'm gonna be honest with you, I'm trying to think of a Disney movie that like really gripped people like that.
There's been very few. I would probably say Lion King had a similar grip on pop culture in the 90s in terms of everything. I think Lion King kind of changed everything about like what we can expect from, you know, a Disney movie as well as like an animated movie with, you know, high level pop musicians performing songs for it and everything. It was a really good hit. And this one, which really brought in a more Broadway style vibe to it. Frozen brought the Lopez couple to make a Broadway type musical element to it that really took it to the next level. And Let It Go, so Let It Go is interesting because Elsa was actually going to be the antagonist of the movie. She was going to be like, I don't know if she was going to be a villain, but like she was going to be evil-er than what they made in the movie. Then they wrote Let It Go.
She's almost like an anti-protagonist.
Yeah, because she doesn't even want to be the good person. She just wants to, like...
She doesn't want to be bad, but she kind of has gotten fed up with being told to, like, hide who she is. And to be fair, I feel like her parents kind of, like, shutting her in and forcing her to not be who she is probably what sped up the instability of her powers.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. Let's talk about the instability of her powers, because for a long time... After seeing the first movie, I just didn't get it. You know, I mentioned earlier in the podcast that I have like a fantasy background, and that kind of has instilled in me the notion that there are rules to magic. There are logical limitations to how big and powerful your powers can get. There's always like a magic system where there are tiers and levels of, you know, getting to where Elsa is. But the real first time that we see her unleash her powers, she unwittingly, you know, puts the entire kingdom under a literal frozen spell. And that's like...
In the middle of the summer.
In the middle of the summer, yeah. Yeah, a real howler in July. Yeah, no, it's...
Big summer blowout.
I love Oaken, dude. But yeah, it really bothered me for a long time. I just didn't understand how people could reconcile, like, how she could possibly be so powerful and that there was, like, no real ramifications of all that after the fact, you know? Like, none of the crops died. Everything seemed to, like, magically fix itself once Arendelle defrosted and stuff. And I've come to terms with the fact that it's just a fairy tale, you know, it's
right.
not meant to be taken
I think it,
to
it,
the extremes.
It relies on the suspension of disbelief. Maybe it's just like, oh, it's a flash freeze, you know?
Right,
it froze
exactly.
so quick, like, it didn't have time to die. And, you know, I could say that. And, you know, how long would you say the movie spans over? Like, a couple days?
I think it's 2 or 3 days, yeah. So
right, Elsa... so I would say that I don't think that stuff was frozen long enough for it to, like, completely die. Like, maybe, I mean, it was
okay.
At a critical yeah. point, but...
I'm overthinking it. I know, guys. Don't yell at me.
Look, look, I do too. And then sometimes I just try to find a logical way to suspend my disbelief.
Have you watched the sequel?
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen it, but yeah, I've seen it.
So... one thing that I'll say, I know that most people consider the first movie to be better. I will say that all the issues that I had with the first movie were addressed in the second movie, and that retroactively made the first movie better, like a better experience.
Right, like you had that in the back of your minds, like the explanation
yes, so
for
like,
some of this stuff.
Now I know why she's so powerful. Oh, okay, because of this, this, and this. Oh, she's like this because of that. Oh, her parents were doing this. Oh, so there's a lot of answers that the second movie gives you that really made me enjoy and like really appreciate the first movie way more than I ever thought I would, to the point where I literally just recently, guys, I made a frozen timeline, which seems kind of dumb if you say it out loud, just because there's only two movies, so you're just like, oh, let's put it in timeline order. Frozen 1 and then Frozen 2. But no, there's like a whole bunch of other like elements to that, like, you know, pinpointing what year exactly the Frozen films take place, putting in order all the different Frozen short films. Then you have like 3 young adult novels, a bunch of comic books and stuff like that. So you got stuff that you can really wrap a timeline around. And I had a lot of fun with that. And I think that's why I pitched this episode as a Frozen episode to Anthony. And I'm glad that he chose it because I have a lot to say about it.
It's almost kind of like the same with Avatar The Last Airbender. People think that, you know, they're thinking just the cartoon, and I'm not even including Korra, but there's all the like comics and novels that kind of been with it. Honestly, same thing with a lot of really popular pop culture, especially with like Star Wars. There's a lot of like in-between stuff. So they did the same thing with Frozen. I haven't read any like books or any of the comics, but it seems like they wanted to do a little bit more to build on the lore and stuff, so...
yeah, and it's really fun. Ultimately, I have a lot of fun with the series because I think that they do have a good time with the lore.
That's cool.
Like, it makes sense for the most part, like, logically, like, why stuff happens. I like when Expanded Universe stuff tries to, like, tie stuff together between projects and fills in gaps that would have otherwise been plot holes or whatever. Stuff like that really fires some neurons in my head. Like, I love that kind of stuff. And I think that's why I love, you know, Star Wars so much too, is that there's such a large quantity of books and comics that expand on the lore.
You just like
but
lore,
Anthony,
in general.
Yeah, for sure. Anthony, what was your first experience of Frozen? When did you first watch it? And what was your initial experience versus how you feel now?
So Frozen wasn't one of those movies that I went to see in the theater. It was one of those...
Both of us were fairly older at that point. We were in our young 20s, if I remember correctly. Yeah,
right. 2013, yeah. So yeah, no, you're right. It's... so, you know, I'm not opposed to going to the movie theaters to see a Disney movie. Maybe I'm a little bit more open to it now. Like back then, I didn't really think about it. Not because I was against it, but just because the stuff just really never was on my radar.
Right.
But I remember talking to somebody about it. I don't remember if it was Miguel, if I had seen it with Miguel, I think I went to like a Redbox, and like I was going through the movies, and like it was like the year after, like 2014, and I had seen Frozen on there. I was like, you know what, Frozen has been huge. It's like this huge phenomenon for everybody. So I decided to rent that along with a couple other things. I watched it in like early 2014, and yeah, I was like, you know, I got to that part where you know, where the Let It Go, and I was like, oh, okay, so this is the part that everybody has been singing. I mean, it's so funny, like, how big of a movie this is, because it made its way into Kingdom Hearts 3, and that scene made it into Kingdom Hearts 3.
Dude, I cannot believe that. Like, that's the funniest thing ever. As you were talking about the Let It Go, I was literally thinking, also, there's that scene in Kingdom Hearts 3. If you don't know, Kingdom Hearts is a series that bridges Final Fantasy and Disney franchises in a multi-franchise, almost like multiverse sort of way, where you have characters that go to different Disney universes and kind of live out a version of the, right. the IP in question. But with Frozen, it was very, very similar to the actual Frozen movie, to the point where, like, when Elsa sang Let It Go, they literally let the song play out for like 3 minutes. Like, it was just like the entire thing just reanimated.
Yeah, it was like
Kingdom Hearts graphics.
Seriously. And then it's like what they changed about it was that, like, Sora, Donald, and Goofy were kind of like following, like, you know, who's this person singing?
And then at the end, one of my favorite lines, oh man, I don't remember it word for word, but the gist of it was, like, right after Elsa finishes singing Let It Go, you have the three characters, Sora, Donald, and Goofy, and Sora goes, well, that was strange.
Donald something always, like that. But yeah, that series is the most unlikeliest multiverse to ever exist. Like, it makes no sense why it exists, but it does, and I love it anyway.
Oh, everyone loves it. But anyway, we're not talking about Kingdom Hearts today. We're talking about Frozen.
Right. It was relevant enough because Frozen made such an impact that it wasn't.
For sure. So you were saying that you watched it on Redbox. You got to the scene where Let It Go happened, and you were like, oh, so this is it.
I mean, I finished it, you know, to...
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not going to just stop at the end of the scene. Well, okay, movie over. I did notice, so I think it was the second watch where, like, I really started to notice some of the changes. This movie changes a lot for a Disney princess movie. You know, when you think of Disney princess movie, you think of a princess and the true love, you know, the prince.
Right. True love's first kid.
Right. Yeah. So this one changes a lot. This movie is about sisterhood, really. And so it was like an act of true love, you know, prerequisite for the magic spell over Anna to break. And so it wasn't true love's kiss. It was Anna, like, sacrificing herself in the moment.
Yeah, so Anna sacrificed herself at the end of the film to save Elsa's life, and that was an act of true love.
Yes.
Nobody would argue that. Like, that was definitely an act of true love. It didn't need to be a kiss. It could have been a kiss, probably, but it didn't need to be. That was
right,
an act of true love
right.
that Anna was able to do. But also, like, you were talking about, like, things that it, like, subverts from, like, the Disney mold, as it were, is, like, the prince that comes to save the day. You know, like, for a good portion of this movie, Prince Hans of the Southern Isles is that guy, like, who's just, like, you know, he's an upstanding citizen. He's, you know, handing out towels to people who are cold in Arendelle. He's not even from around there, but he, like, kind of puts himself in charge of, like, maintaining peace among the people. And then as soon as Anna needs him, it's like, no.
The thing that I like about this movie is that it makes fun of, like, a lot of those tropes about love at first sight, you know, like marrying just right away. And
yes, because
Kristoff calls a lot of it, and so does Elsa. Elsa's just like, you can't marry somebody that you literally just met.
Yeah, that's true.
So
yeah, no, it definitely plays on that really well.
And then we get the lovable oaf in Olaf, and
I never considered him as the lovable oaf, but, like, I wonder if that's why his name is Olaf, because it's very similar to a lovable oaf.
I mean, he is, because, like, he just does a lot of, like, dumb things, but sometimes smart.
And he definitely does get smarter within the boundaries of the sequel, because he's more well-read.
Right.
At that point.
Now he understands that summer is bad.
Yes.
Dude, I love that whole song that he has about, like, frozen things in summer. And it's, and then, like, Kristoff's just like, I'm gonna tell him.
I think part of the charm with this movie is the characters are all really well realized, and there's chemistry between them all.
Yes.
So I saw Disney's latest movie a couple, I think it was last month I saw it, and it's okay. there are parts where it's just like, wow, this is really good. And then there's other parts where it's just like, this is really forgettable. And I think the magic sauce that makes Frozen work where like Wish doesn't is Frozen uses its songs to push the story forward. It uses its songs to express character change.
Let It Go is literally
character change. Yeah. And she moves into, it's like her like molting from a cocoon to a butterfly, you know. It's literally that song,
and there's imagery for that, you know, like the change in the dress. She kind of like uses, yeah, it's like she uses her powers, yeah, to change her dress. She has this whole like ice palace that like builds up around her. So yeah, the song really pushes that forward, and it works so well with what's happening on screen.
And that idea of the songs leading the story, instead of songs interjecting the story,
right,
is what makes Frozen so good. I think about like in the second one, spoilers, I'm sorry, but there's a scene where Elsa dies for like 10 minutes. And then Anna is alone because without Elsa, Olaf also is gone. The song, The Next Right Thing, it's literally about taking the next right step. So it's moving that character from immobile to moving. That formula right there is why these movies work so well. And that's why Wish did not. Because the songs are just feel-good pop songs in Wish. And yeah, the most character-centric song in the entire movie was the villain's theme, King Magnifico. His Descent into Madness song was the only time that I experienced that type of music in the Wish movie. I feel like that's a huge mistake for them to like gloss over that when Frozen did it so well.
Right. Another movie, and I'd love to cover this down the line, that does a really good, and I know that we're talking about other stuff, but I would say that Frozen really inspired a lot of other Disney movies to do the same, is that Moana does a really good job at using their songs to push the story. You I'd get to learn who Maui is through the song, you know, like his powers, how he became Moana's people, who they were, you know, like they did a lot of that. And I would say that I feel like the turning point for these types of movies started with Frozen. You know, Frozen, the animation was like next level too. They did a lot there. I feel like there was some really big advancements with Frozen that they took and they put into a lot of their other films afterwards.
Yeah, so Frozen learned a lot from Tangled, which came out a couple years before Frozen. You know, Tangled is the movie about Rapunzel.
Yes.
When I first saw Frozen, I had seen Tangled for the first time briefly before that. I saw Frozen way after you. I saw it in like 2017.
Oh.
That's when I first was introduced to it. So, like I was saying, we were in our early 20s. It wasn't really in our wheelhouse. It wasn't something that we needed to see. So, when you're like late teens, early 20s, kid stuff really doesn't do anything for you. You know, it's kind of a weird thing where like Disney stuff, I don't care. Yeah, I guess it's going to be nice for kids, whatever. I'm an adult now. I don't need to do that. But I think as an actual adult, late 20s, early 30s, you can appreciate the artistic value of something like Frozen, something like a Tangled. So I watched Tangled. I really liked it. I thought it was a really, really strong movie. And then I didn't like Frozen. For, you know, part of the reasons that I told to you earlier, I just didn't get it. I didn't understand why, like, Frozen was such a huge phenomenon when I thought Tangled was clearly the superior movie. But now that I have grown up with Frozen, you know, allowed it to, like, sink in a little bit. It's one of Jen's, my wife's, comfort movies, so it's always on in the background while she's doing homework or whatever. And I've kind of learned to realize, like, the lore, or like the possibility of lore in Frozen is just so much stronger, you know, like there's so much more they can do in that universe. And I think that that's part of why, like, that wonder of like what's next and like, you know, why did this happen in this movie is so powerful. So I think that's why it works ultimately for me in the long run, and why I appreciate it more now.
Well, I feel like what makes some of these other Disney movies harder to like expand on lore is because a lot of these stories are already like established. You know how like Disney dug into the fairy tales of the Grimm brothers, you know? And sure, yeah. I mean, even Frozen did get like, Disney did get an inspiration for Frozen from a fairy tale, called the Snow Queen.
Right.
And so, but I feel like we all know a lot of these other stories. You see Cinderella, when you see Cinderella, Snow White, Rapunzel, all these other things, and you hear that there's a darker version of them, you're like, okay. Then you like kind of like look into the to the details of it. It's like you're not going to really expand on the lore of that stuff. But like with Frozen, I feel like it was enough of their own IP that, yeah, they could expand upon that, you know?
Yeah. And yeah, no, I totally agree with that. When it comes to like the actual advancements in, you know, CGI, that was a period of time where like they were incorporating more of like Pixar into the Disney fold. You know, I think at that point, I believe that Bob Iger had bought Pixar for Disney. If it wasn't before Frozen, it was shortly after Frozen. I know it was like within that like 2 to 3 year period where like Pixar and Frozen and, you know, the Walt Disney Company transitioned into mostly, you know, hard 3D imagery for their animated stuff.
And they, so, I mean, at that point, they had pretty much become like synonymous with one another, because, you know, I'm gonna be honest, as a kid, like I didn't understand that it was a different company working with Disney. I was like okay, Pixar, that's Disney, right?
Yeah, even though they were different companies at that point, Pixar fits so well within the Disney mold. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't bat an eye about it. Mm-hmm. You know, it fits way better, in my opinion, it fits way better than Star Wars and Marvel, you know?
Right.
They've made it work. That's why, like, it's not like when you go to a Disney park like Hollywood Studios and you see like Toy Story Land and there's a Slinky Dog Dash and there's like the Buzz Lightyear ride, you don't bat an eye about it because it fits so seamlessly within, you know, the mold of the Disney company.
Right. It's Disney, you know?
It's Disney. But yeah, Frozen, it's become so big. Have you seen some of the footage from like the Frozen Land in Hong Kong?
I have not. I didn't even know there was a Frozen Land.
They just opened it. They just opened it like a month or two ago. It looks so cool, dude. Like Frozen Disneyland or Hong Kong Disneyland has a Frozen Land, literally. It's like Galaxy's Edge, but for Frozen.
Mm.
And it looks super authentic. I'd love to go. I don't think I'm going to Hong Kong anytime soon, but that's like, it's become like one of the parks I definitely want to visit just because of that.
That's so cool. Yeah, I would love to check that out. I'll look that up to see what it looks like.
You mentioned the Snow Queen, the book that this was based off of, and that's partly why like Elsa was originally supposed to be a villain, because the Snow Queen was evil. But that was a Hans Christian Andersen story, just like Little Mermaid was. And I think that's why they tease Little Mermaid in the second movie. If you rewatch it and like go to the end where like Elsa is going through Otto Holland's memories, she sees an old conversation with her father and mother where like he's reading a book that clearly has the Little Mermaid logo or like the Little Mermaid silhouette on the cover. And she goes, "What are you reading?" He's like, "Just a new Danish author." And that's Hans Christian Andersen. So I don't know. And I don't know if this has ever been confirmed. I know I'm rambling at this point, but this all comes full circle. I don't know if this has ever been confirmed, but some of the character names in the Frozen movie kind of sound like, if you put them together, it sounds like Hans Christian Andersen. So you actually have Hans, the villain of the first movie.
Yeah, Christoph, I was thinking about that actually.
Hans, Kristoff, Anna, Sven. If you say that all together, Hans, Kristoff, Anna, Sven, it sounds like Hans Christian Andersen, you know? I don't know.
Let them sneaking his name into the movie through their names.
Yeah, jerk. So
one of the biggest things, and you were talking about Tangled and how you felt that it was strong or the stronger movie, but then you kind of like started to understand Frozen a little bit. I think also like one of the biggest draws from it was the fact that it was about sisterhood and that they strayed away from the true love thing. There was a love story in there. There was, you know, something going on between Anna and Kristoff, but it wasn't the normal lovey-dovey stuff of like the usual Disney stuff where they're, you know, walking down this amazing thing and their eyes meet. You know, they do meet beautiful places together that are very magical, but usually it's like in those moments there's not romance happening. Like, remember that whole area where they meet Olaf? It's such a beautiful and it's a beautiful area that honestly they could have put a strong romantic moment in that thing, but It was honestly...
It's more
it was
like they're butting heads at that point.
Right.
So I just got a call from Jen, my wife. She's on her way home, but she wanted me to tell you and the listeners of the podcast that Frozen is great. She watches it 2 times a year at least. And I was just like, that's cutting, you know, that's a very low bar. Like, obviously you watch it 2 times a year. You watch it 2 times a month. What are you talking about? But she wanted to say specifically a part that like annoys her is in the second movie early on in the opening song, Something's Never Changed. At the end of it, Elsa promises the people of Arendelle that the flag will always fly. And then literally like 5 minutes later, the wind spirit wakes up and like takes the flag of Arendelle away. So that's something that really bothers her every time. Elsa just lied to people, even though she had no control over that, obviously.
The second one also brought in a crossover from one of our favorite cartoons.
Did it?
Yeah, it did. You know, it brought in the song Into the Unknown from, remember?
Wait, what am I missing?
Okay, that's the name of the intro and outro for the really weird Cartoon Network cartoon that we covered.
Oh, are you talking about Over the Garden Wall?
Yes, 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 yes. That's the name.
Is that the name of that song?
That's the name of the song, Into the Unknown.
Oh, you're right. I didn't even realize that.
It's so wild. Man. That's why, like, when we were covering I kept on making Frozen references.
You're right. Yeah, so if you go back, you know, 10, 20 episodes, maybe even more, we had a whole podcast on probably one of the best Cartoon Network limited series ever, Over the Garden Wall. Must listen, must watch. That's such a fun show. If you ever get the opportunity to watch Over the Garden Wall, it's amazing. And also, it's like a perfect autumn show. Like, I watch it pretty regularly when it comes like August, September, that time of year. It's just like, it's so good.
It is. But yeah, the whole reason why I brought it up was because the name of that song...
Into the Unknown.
Right, right. Although the song in that cartoon is a lot different than that, but...
No, you made a good point earlier about how Kristoff and Anna, like, they're put in situations that normally would be, like, meet-cute situations in, like, movies where, like, the two characters would start falling in love with each other, but they don't, you know? A lot of the times they butt heads in, you know, in Frozen, like... They don't always get along.
In that moment, it's like instead of it being a romantic moment, it's a comedic moment because that's where we get the introduction to Olaf, you know?
Where we start really seeing more of Kristoff's character shine is after Elsa, or after they make it to Elsa's palace and she hits Anna in the heart by accident with her magic. Hans really takes care of her. He will do anything to keep Anna alive at that point. Even though he doesn't love her, it's a selfless act. And I think that's where we really see his character. There's nothing in it for him if Anna dies.
Yeah.
But he's just a good guy. And I think that's ultimately what Anna sees by the end of the movie.
I really do enjoy his character. While he has like his moments of stubbornness, he's not like a blockhead. He's definitely smart. He's been around the block. He's just a very enjoyable character, and the natural growth between him and Anna was like, it was refreshing for a Disney movie. It just didn't, I guess the progression felt a lot more natural than some of the older Disney movies.
I also feel like he's kind of like an introvert type person, mm-hmm. where like he lives alone, he lives with his reindeer, his best friend. When we first meet him, when he goes into Oaken's shed and he's like covered in snow, he's all cold and like he doesn't really want to talk to anyone. He's just like, carrots behind you. You know, like that's all he says to Anna. But then when we see him in Oaken's shed, you know, like later on when he's camping for the night, he's got his lute, he's playing a song, reindeers are better than people, blah, blah, blah. And it really gives him a lot of much needed character development. It gives him a lot of much needed coloring, you know, like it filled in the gaps of like who this person is. Like he's just a very cold, seemingly heartless person until you see like, oh, he's just introverted. He doesn't like talking to people. He likes talking to his reindeer.
I totally get what you're talking about, because he even has like those moments where he like speaks for Sven.
Right. Yeah. He literally speaks for the reindeer. Let's talk about the characteristics of Anna and Elsa. We have Elsa, who we spoke briefly about, where she's destined to become queen. Her father, the king, died 3 years before the start of this movie, and in that time, she's waited to be coronated, but she's always been in the shadows because she's had to hide her powers so that Anna doesn't remember that she has powers and potentially get worse again. This always kind of put her in a box. And I don't think she ever really wanted to be queen. but it was always a duty that she needed to accomplish. What do you feel about Elsa?
Elsa is, you know, coming into this, she's definitely, she's an interesting character. And like you said, you don't really understand too much about her until you get to the second film, as far as like why she's so powerful. But right. I always saw her as this individual, and I feel like I've seen this a lot in different movies where there's a character with a magical power that is very unstable, and they just, they don't know how to filter it, you know? And so I'm trying to think of a perfect example. I know I've seen a ton of them, but I can't think of an example. But she just doesn't know how to control. It's literally so unstable that she can't touch anything without her gloves because it'll freeze in her hands.
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying. And if you try to like really put a fantasy spin on it, it's pretty much like she's an open channel for ice magic. You know, yes. And she doesn't know how to close it.
Like, she doesn't know. It's like leaving a hose on full throttle, and yeah, she doesn't have the spigot to be able to control it. It's just on all the time.
Yeah. Right.
So.
And you have the Anna, who's the complete opposite. She's bubbly. She's outgoing. She doesn't want to be stuck inside at all. I don't think she necessarily wants to be queen, even though she becomes queen later on in the story. But I think she's naturally more adept at being personable, which is a quality that, you know, a good ruler or a good leader needs to have. So I think that her eventual becoming queen in the second movie really is a good fit for her versus, you know, Elsa, who does it more for duty.
Right. Yeah, Anna definitely does have that. She's better with having that personal interaction with people that I would say is very important for any good ruler.
But she's young enough where she can be taken advantage of, which did happen in the first movie where, you know, Prince Hans.
Yes.
Basically had, they have that almost like a whole new world scene where like the two just kind of like fall all over each other, like in love, like madly in love, and they fall in love in basically an evening.
Right. They finish each other's sandwiches, you know?
That's what I was going to say. I don't think you've watched my Frozen video. If you guys haven't, I highly recommend it. I tried my best to litter as many Frozen like one-liners or like song lyrics in there as much as possible. And I had a guest on for that video. I had Josh from Modern Mouse, who does a lot of Disney stuff. I had him actually play like an actual historian, like from within Arendelle. So he was playing like an in-universe character, and I was like the narrator, and like he would interject with certain thoughts or whatever. There was literally a moment in the video where I was just like, you know, Princess Anna and Prince Hans got so close very quickly that they were basically finishing each other's, and then I had Josh like jump in with sandwiches. It was fun. I had a really good time writing and like recording that. So if you guys ever, we'll leave it in the show notes.
Oh yeah, watch it. Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. We'll put it into the show notes. I mean, it's very relevant for what we're covering.
It's extremely relevant. Yeah.
No, it really is funny. This song really does show how naive she is. I mean, she's been shut from the world for so long, you know?
But what's amazing about the song is that it tricks the viewer, because there's nothing in that moment where you feel Hans isn't trustworthy. You can even rewatch the movie after knowing that Hans is the villain, and you kind of realize, oh, he's kind of a cool dude. He's kind of a nice guy. He gets along with Anna. Everyone loves Anna, right?
Really? And they perpetuate that for so long into the movie.
Yeah.
And I was watching that. I was like, I know, because I've seen it before. I'm like, I know that this is the bad guy, but literally this guy wants to do the right thing. He's even like, don't kill Elsa.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, he plays the long game really well.
He really does. Like, that man.
It doesn't work in his favor, but like, you know.
Right. It's not until the end, really, that he's revealed to be the bad guy, you know? We're thinking that it's mostly like, you know, like his father, who's the one that's like not really doing the right thing, which I guess could be a foreshadow that the son is bad, but...
Right. Anthony, is there anything else you want to say about Frozen before we close this conversation up?
Love is an open door, man.
Oh, that's a good one. I will say what this film has going for it Even if you haven't seen it or like don't appreciate Disney movies, whatever, this is a very charming movie. Mm-hmm. You know, like it has a certain aesthetic, a certain vibe. It's a certain mood that like totally charms you. And that's something that all films kind of strive for, you know, is to get you to feel something. And what this gets you to, or what this gets me to feel is it just puts me in a certain life is easy mood, you know, like it just kind of like all my day-to-day worries are gone when the movie's on, basically, you know. And I think that that's an important thing when it comes to escapism in entertainment. Because, you know, with any entertainment, there's a level of escapism. You want to experience what other people are experiencing.
Right.
But with this, it's a whole new world, really. They you know, they adapt, like...
Wrong movie.
Norway. Sorry. they adapt Norway into this, like, you know, 1800s fantasy setting. And it's so cool. I think they do a really good job with it.
I agree. I think that Frozen is really good. I think that it does a lot for Disney movies. It's not just a change in story and, you know, changing the dynamic between a princess and Prince Charming and sisterhood, but there was a lot of technological advances. You talked about how the use of music to push the story forward. They did a really good job with that stuff, and
it's really no wonder that shown, it's as popular, yeah, as it is.
Right. I think that a lot of this stuff is stuff that people don't know or understand why they like it, but these are the reasons why.
Yeah, no, so. I agree. Guys, thank you so much for listening to Project Ecology, episode 67. We look forward to recording our next episode. Not sure what it is yet, but we will find out and we will let you know. And if you are interested in figuring out what we're going to be covering before we cover it, please be sure to follow us on our socials. We will leave them in the show notes, but if you follow Project Ecology on Instagram or Peak Ecology on Twitter, as well as our individual handles there, again, which you'll find in the show notes, you will figure out what we're up to in advance. And yeah, we'd love to hear what your thoughts are. If you'd like to leave us any feedback whatsoever, 5-star reviews are always welcome. We'd love to read them.
Absolutely.
And yeah, thanks guys.
Thank you.
Bye. Have a good one.
Let it go.